Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. By the band's own estimation, Womb is an exercise in conjuring vibes. With April Camlin on drums and Al Schatz on synths, the Baltimore duo creates groovy electronic pop with an emphasis on polyrhythmic structures. Womb spent their early years in Chicago before coming to Baltimore, April's hometown. Always a creative child, April spent a lot of time in the background and described the process of finding her scene and getting involved with music. It's the visceral yet controlled nature of drumming that appeals to April, though she often found it challenging to get people to take her seriously as a female drummer. We talked about that experience, the diversifying Baltimore music scene, and discovering her creative community when living in the Copycat Building. April is also a fine artist who works in textiles, and she talked about the roles her art and music play in influencing each other. Here's our conversation. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a Baltimore-based textile artist and musician, and that's kind of what I say when people ask me that question.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from here, yeah.
From the city or the suburb?
I'm from Blair Edison.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What was growing up there like?
It was great. I grew up in the same house that my mother grew up in, and I just remember there were a lot of kids around, and I lived in a row house, so all of the front yards were connected, and I had a lot of friends on my block, and I had one childhood best friend, and we would invent these really funny games, and it was really great. I think that having a lot of family close by was really, of course I took advantage of it as a child. It wasn't something I was really thinking about, but in retrospect, I'm appreciative that I got to live in such a small community.
Is your family still in that house?
Mm-mm. No, we moved out when I was 10, I believe, and we moved to Essex. And now my mom lives in Pittsburgh and my dad lives in Havre de Grace.
So did you feel that you had a particularly like city-like or suburban childhood, or did you get a bit of a mix there?
I think that it was kind of a mix because I feel that there's a kind of a bubble that exists in the suburbs that I experienced pretty fully as a child. And I kept to myself a lot in general, and so that was sort of intensified. But I also feel like there were a lot of things that were very city-like about the way that I was raised. For example, just the way that my mother would teach me about how to navigate as a woman moving alone through a city, things that were kind of instilled in my mind from an early age, how to take care of myself and how to be on my own and how to be aware and present. And actually, that's the reason why we moved out of that house, was just that the crime was starting to get pretty bad in that neighborhood. And my parents just didn't want to raise their children in the midst of that.
Were you happy to move when you were 10?
I was sad. I've always been a little bit just not so into change, even though it's kind of a constant in all of our lives. And I've learned to embrace it a little more fully. But it was, I was sad. Yeah. But it was also exciting because the house that we were moving into, I was going to get my own room, and I had shared a room with my brother. And that was very exciting. as a person preparing to move into adolescence, I was really needing my own space. So that was cool.
Did you decorate your own room in like a particular way, or what kinds of exciting things did you do?
I had this horrific wallpaper that was like geese playing with hats and ribbons coming off of the hats. There was a border around. I loved that wallpaper so much.
Have you ever seen those concrete geese that are on front doorsteps that people dress up in clothing?
I think so.
They are so bizarre. And I'm from Ohio, and my friends and I just in the last year came to the conclusion, you know, after all moving away and everything, that this is not a thing that's everywhere. And so I wondered if you had that experience as someone with this goose and ribbon motif.
I think I've seen the wooden cutouts of the geese, but I'm not sure about concrete and clothing.
Very odd. So were you close with your brother, and how close in age were you guys?
We're 3.5 years apart. We were pretty close. Yeah, mm-hmm. We would definitely beat the crap out of each other, and I would dress him up in my clothing and bring him downstairs and introduce him to my parents as my best friend Alice, because his name is Alex, and they would he would go along with it, and they would go along with it. And I remember once I was old enough for them to leave us alone when they went to work, because before that we both went to my grandparents during the summer when they were working. I just remember getting my giving my parents a phone call, either my mom or my dad, while they were at work, and it was just like they would pick up the phone and it would just be the sound of my brother and I screaming and having some fight. We were just chasing each other around the house, and I can't even imagine how simultaneously funny and very annoying that must have been for them to deal with.
Were you a creative kid?
Yeah, yeah.
What kinds of stuff were you doing and making?
I definitely started drawing from the moment that I was able to hold a pencil in my hand. I have this, my mom has this drawing that I did when she was pregnant with my brother. So I would have been, you know, three, I guess. And it's titled April and Mommy with Babies in Their Bellies, because I just saw my mom with a baby in her belly and I just wanted to be just like her. So I was always really into drawing, and my grandmother is an artist and a seamstress. So she taught me how to paint, and she taught me how to sew and how to knit. And I spent a lot of time, and when I was a kid, we actually did live with my grandparents for a little while. So that was really kind of a as I mentioned, I kept to myself a lot as a kid, and that was kind of a way for me to create this universe for myself. And I read a lot of fantasy and sci-fi books, and I just was really interested in the idea of these alternate worlds, and I got really into doing these ornate drawings of costumes and dragons. And I have this pastel drawing from my childhood that I did that's like a landscape under the sea. There's orcas and dolphins kind of swimming very peacefully, and then there's just this dragon that's breathing fire into the water somehow and burning one of the dolphins.
Oh no.
It's really weird. I don't know why I chose that as my subject matter.
Kids are
or
weird.
Or why I'm talking about
kids
it right
are weird
now.
And that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
Was anyone concerned by the
no,
dragon?
No. You
drawing?
Know, I'll say this about my parents is they have always, and they always did, really encourage me to be creative and to be weird. And my dad was a musician in bands growing when he was younger. And I think he really appreciates that I am in that world too. And even if they didn't always understand why I was doing the things that I was doing, they always encouraged me and they kind of let me do my own thing. Yeah, I wasn't really a bad kid. I wasn't really cool enough to be bad. So I think it was like I was just off in my own world and they knew I was fine. So they just let me do my thing. Yeah.
Were you into music as a kid too?
Well, yeah, it just naturally happened because my dad was a musician and was super into, he's like a big prog guy. So I feel like if you go through my baby albums, half of the photo captions are like Frank Zappa song titles. So I definitely remember going through his record collection at a young age and always just listening to, absorbing the music that he was playing.
And it seems like that influence has certainly stayed with you. I mean, is that fair?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So what was the first band you were in or the first song you wrote?
Well, the first band I was in, I guess, I was technically in the school band in middle school, and I played the station, you know, the single snare drum or the giant crash cymbals or the big bass drum. So I was just doing all of the and occasional triangle playing. But then I guess the first band I was in was this band in 2007, I think it must have been. I was a late bloomer for basically every aspect of my life, including playing in bands. I didn't really get into that in high school or college or anything. So I was in this band with a bunch of amazing Baltimore women called Alalia, and we were kind of this doomy band with two drummers and two bass players and a saxophone player, and I was a singer, and I was just screaming unintelligibly. It was really fun. It was very short-lived. And that was really my only music project in Baltimore. I would occasionally do some improv stuff with people, but it was nothing ever super serious. So I feel like the first serious music project that I was in was Womb. Yeah.
When you were younger, were you aware of the Baltimore music scene? Or, you know, being in the suburbs, I think that can kind of go like either way. You know, you can be totally oblivious to like what's happening in your backyard. Yeah. What was your experience with your connection to Baltimore music?
Well, I was pretty isolated. You know, this was pre-internet for the most part. I mean, the internet was slowly creeping into all of our lives, and we had, you know, email and geocities.com and message boards and et cetera. But I didn't really spend a ton of time on the internet. And I was just kind of, as I said, pretty isolated. And I do remember the first time I kind of stumbled across a music scene was really by accident. I went to some punk shows at church basements and stuff like that that were around in the Towson area. But I wasn't ever really very, I never found it all that compelling. And I remember one night I was just walking down the street in the middle of Towson, and there was this punk, I heard this punk show happening, and I saw all these people outside of this vintage clothing store that I had been to many, many times, 10 Car Pileup, that may, I'm sure many people have a nostalgic connection to in the city. And I thought to myself, man, what's going on in there? That seems really cool. And I went upstairs, and it was like I had discovered this whole world that I didn't even know was happening. And that was really exciting to me. That was really there. I had a really hard time feeling like there was anywhere I belonged. And I don't really feel like the punk scene provided me with that. But it was at least nice to know that there were other weirdos out there, and that there were people making music and doing things kind of on their own terms. So that was really exciting. And so then I started going to shows there more. And that's kind of how I started. And that sort of led to me finding out about shows in the Copycat, and then going to the Talking Head and finding the music scene that way. I remember Jason Urich, who used to live in Baltimore, had a record store, and he would have shows there. And so I would go to shows there and at the old True Vine. And it was just this slow process of discovery, just by word of mouth.
And yeah. You were like meeting people at these shows and making friends, or were you kind of doing your own thing?
I eventually started making friends, but it took a long time. Yeah. For the most part, I was kind of just standing in the back creepily and looking at, watching, listening. Yeah.
And then what brought you to Chicago?
I moved to Chicago. I just felt like I needed a change. I was really starting to feel stagnant in Baltimore, and I met Al, and I decided to move to Chicago. And it just from going out there and hanging out there, I really started to feel an affinity for that city, and I just needed to. I felt like there were things about growing up in Baltimore and then continuing to live there that made my life very easy, and I wanted the challenge of discovering myself in a new place. And it remains one of the best things I ever did for myself. While I'm happy, very, very happy to be back in Baltimore, I think that moving to Chicago was very important for me.
So when you were younger, did you have that itch to like get out of your hometown, or was that something you had to kind of force yourself to do?
I don't think I really felt an itch, because I moved into the Copycat when I had just turned 21, and I had dropped out of college, and I was really just I didn't really have the standard academic connection to other people my own age that you would get by going to college, and so I just happened to grow up in this city that had such an amazing scene, and it really, I felt so happy there. And I that was really the Copycat. You know, I talked a lot earlier about feeling very disconnected and not really feeling like I belonged anywhere. And the Copycat was the first time I really felt like I actually belonged somewhere, and there were people who were like me. So I didn't I didn't have that itch because I was just so stimulated and just so happy there.
Did you meet Al in Baltimore or Chicago?
Baltimore, I believe. Yeah, because he was in this band, Bird Names, that I became really good friends with all of them, and they would tour out to Baltimore, and then I would tour out to Chicago sometimes too. So yeah, that was the, and I always felt like there was a Chicago Baltimore connection. There were a lot of people that were friends and connected through that web.
So tell me about the forming of Womb.
We both were wanting to experiment with playing odd time signatures and really challenging ourselves musically. I had been messing around on the drum kit for, you know, a little while, and I wanted to take it more seriously. And he had been playing bass in Bird Names and wanted to start playing keyboards more seriously. So we both were at this similar experiential level that made us feel very comfortable working with each other. And I think that we both had a lot of the same musical influences. We were both listening to a lot of Stereolab and a lot of Can and all of, you know, many, many other musicians in that canon. I could go on, but I probably don't need to. But so it just naturally happened. We didn't really set out to start a band. We just started jamming together. And then our friends, Lower Dens and Future Islands, were coming through Chicago on tour, and they hit us up like, hey, do you know anyone who wants to play this show with us, or do you want to play this show with us? And we thought, hey, sure, let's play this show. I guess we're a band now. And then the band was born.
What was it like performing as Womb for the first time?
I think it's hard for me to really remember exactly how I felt. I was really excited. I had been wanting to play the drums in a band for a really long time, and having a hard time finding people who would take me seriously as a drummer, as a female musician, and really struggling with that. And I felt like Al was really the first person who really heard what I was playing and really saw the potential that I had, and just wanted to work with me. And it was just really, it was so much fun. It was really exciting.
Why weren't people taking you seriously as a drummer?
Because I'm a woman. I'm sure it's like, you know, there's probably more to it than that, maybe, but I don't really think there is more to it than that. I think it's, yeah.
And that is the thesis of this podcast.
Yeah.
So when you were playing in Chicago, it sounds like you still kind of had this Baltimore connection, like the first bands you played with in Chicago or Baltimore bands. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Do you guys feel like other people sensed that tie to Baltimore as well?
Other people in the music scene, mm-hmm. in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah. I think it happens in a lot of major metropolitan areas, and maybe even some that aren't so major, but that have some established weirdos living there. There is just this network of people who, because we're all booking our own tours. You know, I've booked every Womb tour that we've ever been on, except for the tours that we have been on in Europe. But everything in the U.S. has been me. And I think a lot of bands function that way, where there's one or two people who just do it. And so it's kind of this network of favors that are being exchanged, where you go to a city and somebody helps you, and then they come to your town and you help them. And I think that organically builds this community of people who just all know each other and know, or if they don't know them personally, they know of them. And of course, as the internet starts to come into play while this scene is blossoming, that just becomes even more apparent that all these connections exist.
Were there many other female drummers in the Chicago scene at that time?
That was the thing that was really cool for me moving to Chicago, was that there were a lot of female musicians, a lot more. And I think that things have certainly changed in Baltimore, are still changing for the better. But, you know, when I left, it was a little grim, and it was definitely a very, very masculine music scene. And it was very refreshing to go to this bigger city where there were some really, really powerful female musicians who were being taken very seriously and who were making very exciting music. And so it wasn't like a 50-50, but at least it was a noticeably larger percentage.
Were you doing visual arts in Chicago as well, or just focusing on your music?
I did some visual art. I worked as an artist assistant for Nick Cave for 2 years. So
that's amazing.
It was fun. And I was working for him full time doing hand sewing, and a lot of my physical and mental artistic energy were being poured into that job. And I reached a point where I was okay with that because I do like to compulsively make things. And so I can happily, at that point, I was happily just making stuff for somebody else. So I kind of all but ceased my own visual practice. And then I decided that I wanted to go back to and finish my degree at MICA. And that's when I went back to school, and suddenly my professors were throwing these conceptual curveballs at me, and I had to make my way through that. It was really hard at first because I had all but stopped considering myself an artist. I thought, I'm just going to go back to school, I'm going to learn a bunch of skills, and then I'm just going to be a fabrication. I'm going to go into fabrication. And I got there and started thinking more conceptually and doing more reading and more discussion. And so that I really feel like I didn't step into my own practice until probably 2013, something like that. I was making work before that, and I used to do a lot more performance stuff, but it feels more serious now than it used to, for sure.
So when you were a kid with your grandma sewing and embroidering, was it clear to you that that would later become part of your life or your art in some way?
Yeah, to me, I've always had a connection to those material mediums. And I don't always understand why, and I'm still trying to parse that out for myself. But I think that even then, I recognized how vitally important it was to me to just be making these things and exercising my creative mind.
So school was what brought you back to Baltimore?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my family, a lot of my family is here, and it just kind of made sense for me. There was a lot of stuff that was happening in my family that it would be helpful for me to, I realized it would be helpful for me if I was present, more physically present, and I just, MICA just made sense because I started there as a freshman and before I dropped out of college. And so they were willing to work with me and honor my old credits, even though they were pretty old. And it was, I hesitate to say affordable, but it was certainly cheaper than SAIC by a lot. So it seemed like the best option.
And did WOOM resume as soon as you got back to Baltimore?
Yeah, we didn't really ever stop. And it also made sense for Al to move here because he had been the sound engineer for Dan Deacon for the past year or two prior to us moving. So it just really made sense for both of us.
And is that how you kind of got involved with the whole like Wham City crew, just through that connection?
No. I was involved with Wham City from before that, from when I moved into the Copycat.
Yeah. Were you like throwing shows in your place and stuff? Or what was your experience at the Copycat like?
I never had shows in my place because I never wanted to have that many people in my living space, but I certainly was involved with running shows and organizing shows, and I mean, it was just an amazing time. We were all just making art all the time, making art and music, and spending so much time together and influencing each other so deeply, and just hanging out, having casual time together that felt very fun. And as I mentioned, I didn't have that kind of college experience of fellowship in the dorm rooms and that sort of thing where you really have these intense connections with groups of people. And for me, that was the first time that I had experienced something like that and experienced it with people that I felt in such communion with. And so that was just, it was one of the most important experiences of my life, for sure.
Being a band that existed in Chicago and Baltimore, how strongly do you think your music or your identity as a band is tied to either of those cities?
I don't feel like our identity is tied to a place. I think it's more because it's when we're in our practice space and we're writing music, we're not thinking about, I mean, maybe we're thinking about the political landscape and we're thinking about things that are happening, but we're also just writing music, and that can happen anywhere. And I guess we can be influenced by what's happening around us. And the scene in Chicago was a little bit proggier, a little darker. And I think that our music has probably gotten a little poppier and more upbeat since we moved to Baltimore. But I don't know. I have my own Baltimore pride, so I really identify as a Baltimore creative person. But beyond that, I don't think it's necessarily, I don't think you would listen to our music and think, oh, they're definitely from Baltimore. But that's just my opinion.
And I feel like maybe I'm being ignorant here, but beyond Baltimore Club, it doesn't seem like there's so much those like Baltimore signifiers in music. You know, there's like these Baltimore bands that we all know and love, but I don't know if a random person would listen to two big acts from Baltimore and necessarily know they're from there. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Do you find your music and your visual arts like informing or influencing each other at all?
Definitely. I have a tendency to compartmentalize various aspects of my life. And I used to keep my music and my arts practice very separate in my mind. And I don't really totally understand why I did that, but you know, I think I was potentially nervous that if I allowed them to mingle, I would have to eventually end up in positions where I would have to make very hard choices about placing them in hierarchy, one over the other. And I slowly started to realize that my music and my art are just the same conversation in different voices. You know, my drum parts that I'm interested in are structural, highly structural and polyrhythmic, but also interested in interruption of flow and working in these complex patterns. And I think that could also be a description of my work that I'm, you know, in textiles. So I think it's all about the structure and the repetition. And it was kind of a relief when I realized that I didn't have to keep them separate anymore, I guess. Yeah.
What is it about the drums that you fell in love with?
It just feels so good to play them. I think it's because I am very rhythmically oriented in my life. Most things that I'm drawn towards are existing in some type of rhythm, and I look for rhythms and patterns in everything that's around me. And so drumming just feels like a natural manifestation of that interest. And I can't totally put my finger on what it is about the drums that calls to me, but it started at, you know, when I was in middle school, I felt really intrigued by the drums and by rhythm. So I can't totally say, but I think that it's challenging, and I like the challenge, and I like the physicality of it. And it's very, it feels like a very controlled, visceral movement. So it can be both, very controlled and very free at the same time. And I think a lot of drummers that I'm influenced by are approaching their practice from that similar vantage point. If that makes any sense.
I don't know.
I feel like I might just
It does. You touched on it a little bit earlier, but what were some of the differences you saw when you left Baltimore, between when you left Baltimore and then when you came back from Chicago in the music scene?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, and this is something that I've heard echoed in other episodes of your podcast and in other voices throughout the city, that the music scene in Baltimore is slowly becoming much more intersectional and much more inclusive and really reflecting on itself and seeing where the exclusivity was happening and who was being left out and who wasn't being given equal purchase. And I think that there are a lot of people in the city who are very interested in changing that dynamic. And that's what makes me the proudest to live in the city, that response is happening. And of course, it's happening in the wake of the uprising, but I think it was starting to happen even before that. And I think that it's just been really beautiful for me, as, you know, I oftentimes kind of feel like an outsider, because I don't, beyond playing the shows, I don't really go out to a lot of shows. But from my own small observation, that seems to be how things are changing and progressing, and it's just really wonderful.
Is there anything lacking in this scene that Chicago had that you miss about that city?
I think that from a technical standpoint, having some more larger capacity venues would be really helpful. Things, you know, venues that are similar capacity to the old Sonar or something like that. I think then we could have larger events, and some of the bands who've gotten bigger who are from here could play here, because there isn't really anywhere for them to play. And we could get more acts coming from outside the city, which would be cool. But I don't know. And I guess like a couple more mid-sized venues with some really nice PAs. But we've got some good venues here too. I don't know. I think that just continuing to grow the diversity of the scene, the more it keeps happening, the better it's going to get.
Well, your album Maintain came out last year, and I was hoping...
I think it came out the year before, or no, that was last... No, it was last...
Well,
it was last
year. We're at the end of this year, so seems like it's been...
I keep thinking it's longer ago than it was, but yes, you were right. It was in 2015.
Well, I was hoping you could tell me about the conception of that album and the writing and recording of it.
Well, we recorded that album in our practice space, and we never really anticipated that it would... We had written all these songs, and we knew we needed to record them, and we didn't have any money, and we were very particular about how we wanted the drums to sound. And so Al said, I'm just going to try to record the drums and see what happens. And he built this box in the practice space out of those moving packing blankets. So it was like a walls and ceiling, and I was just inside this box. It was so hot. It was in the summertime, and there was no ventilation. And he borrowed a bunch of... He has a really nice ribbon mic that we used as the overhead mic, and then he borrowed a bunch of nice mics from various friends. Shout out to Christian Best, who is now in Australia, and who loaned us some really great mics. And we just set everything up, and we thought that doing it ourselves and being kind of released from the financial worry of burning up studio time would help us get more candid takes and just more energy. And we kind of tried to be really chill about the process. We took 2 weeks, and we wouldn't play the same song over and over and over and over again. We would just play a song, do a take, play another song, then do some jamming, then do another take of a different song. And we tried to go, you know, we tried to be very, very loose about it. And then I went off to a residency in Maine, and then Al barricaded himself in the practice space and recorded all of the synth tracks. And that was before we were doing a lot of sequencing too. So some of those tracks I can imagine were really insane for him to record. And then we had this album that we actually liked, and that didn't sound like crap somehow. So we thought to ourselves, wow, okay, maybe we should put this out as a record. And Stu from East Records had approached us before and had talked to us about putting out a record, and we were kind of just like, well, we don't know if this is going to sound good or not, so we're not going to commit. And then once we knew that it didn't sound like total garbage, we hit up Stu and said, hey, you still want to put out a record? And that's the story.
So going forward, do you think you will, will you stay with that loose DIY approach? Or, I mean, if you have the money, are you gonna try to use it?
If we have the money, it would be great to, and we actually did record some demos with Dan from a little while ago, but we haven't finished those. But it would be nice to be able to really get perfect all of the sounds. And I just think we did a great job. And I think we have talked about potentially self-recording again, but we also talk about going into a studio and being able to really just spend the money and get it to sound exactly like how we want it.
What do you think was your evolution like between Distance and Maintain?
I think we just, you know, Distance was so close to the beginning of our band's birth, and I stand by that album. I still feel good about it, but I think we are still really finding ourselves and trying to figure out what kind of songwriting. I mean, we're still trying to figure out what kind of songwriting process works for us. It's usually quite painful for us to write songs because we really have to fight for those songs. But so I think it was just getting more comfortable with our sound, learning more about what we wanted to sound like, Al getting different synths that he felt better about. And because I think that, yeah, on Maintain, that was kind of at the beginning of when we started to work with sequencing. And Distance, we were kind of holding on to this concept of being totally analog and playing everything live and not having anything sequenced. And it was just so insane for Al. He just had all of these foot controllers, and he was playing these polyrhythmic parts with his two hands on two different synths. And I think it was very inhibitive to being more free about our songwriting. So incorporating the sequences really helped us write more songs. And also, Al, I always have fun because I'm just, you know, hitting the drum, you know, banging away over there. But he's just in this tangled rat king of synth technical problems that I can't even begin to understand. And so I think by Maintain, he was starting to have more fun. And I think that really, you can hear that.
And does that influence your playing too? Like when you can just both be
oh, yeah.
a little more free and relaxed?
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
I read somewhere that you guys described yourselves as a radical band. And I was hoping you could tell me more about that.
Well, actually, someone else used that and they said self-described radical band. And when that came out, we kind of smacked our foreheads and said, we never said that. We never described ourselves as that.
So that's why I have to ask.
Yeah, that's one of those echo chambers that happens in internet journalism where this term happens and then it just gets thrown around. And so thank you for asking. But we never described ourselves
as that. You are not radical. Okay. Yeah, I remember once interviewing a musician, and it said somewhere that she like learned to play the guitar just when she was in this like new successful band. And so I asked her about that, and she's like, nope, everyone says that I learned in seventh grade. So you just got to check, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what are you guys working on now, and what's next for you?
Well, we have a performance coming up on Thursday at the Walters, and we're scoring a 9-minute long short film by Jim Henson called Timepiece, and we're doing an all electronic set with that. So I'm programming drum beats and playing a sampler, like a triggering sampler live, and he's playing synths, and he's busting out his old sequential circuits 6-track for this one, which is exciting because I love the way that synth sounds. But beyond that, we don't really have anything on the books. I think we're just gonna work on new music, and I'm going away to a residency for the whole month of January, so I'll kind of be off in my own world exploring my own practice. But I expect that when I get back, I'll have lots of ideas.
Well, April, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
That was April Camlin of Womb, and thanks for listening to our conversation. Female Trouble is on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. And if you liked what you heard, it would help us out to give us a rating and subscribe on iTunes. You can always listen online at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble and follow us on Twitter at FMLTrouble. Also, feel free to say hi or suggest a guest to be featured by emailing me at qkelly@baltsun.com. and that's Q-K-E-L-L-E-Y at baldsun.com. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty featuring TT the Artist. Thanks again, and we'll be back next week.